Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
On April 2nd, voters in Salisbury's Council 2 district could dramatically change the direction of the city government. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. What was a stunning primary outcome? The challenger, Jake Day, racked up around 846 votes to that of the incumbent, two-term council vice president Debbie Campbell, who garnered 320 votes. Coming in third was Jack Heath with 218. District 2 is an at-large district and includes most of the city except for the West Side neighborhood. It also runs east of South Salisbury Boulevard from East Main Street to East College Avenue. And because of the staggered elections, Campbell's seat is the only one that's up for the general election. In studio at this moment, we have Jake Day. He is the challenger. We are also awaiting Council Vice President Debbie Campbell to hopefully join us, as she has been invited to do so. So, Jake, I'm going to start with you. And first of all, what was your reaction to the primary results? I mean, it's not just that you were ahead, but that there was this seemed to be at least overwhelming vote for either you or the other candidate, as opposed to the incumbent.
Yeah. First of all, good morning, Don.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me here. I appreciate it. Long time Delmarva Public Radio listener, and delighted to be here. So it was humbling, it was overwhelming, and it was unpredictable. From what I saw out in the community, there was a ton of support. I spent every weekend and as much time after work as I could knocking on doors, talking to voters, but it was still overwhelming and unpredictable. I don't know. As you can imagine, in a Salisbury City Council race, there's no resources for polling. So you have no idea how it's going to turn out. You have anecdotes, you have your own experiences, but what I saw was a tremendous groundswell of support. And again, it's humbling and it's also exhilarating. So it's energized me for the rest of the race. It's energized me for the next 11 days. And I'm excited for what I hope will be 2.5 years. And then we'll see where we go from there of changing the way the business of Salisbury is done.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you, for the sense that you get in terms of the people you talk to, as much as one gets one, as you say, in a small election like this, do you get any sense about why people voted the way they did?
It's a great question, and yes, I do. People say that they want change, but what does that mean? What people seem to want is a council that is at once professional, collegial, cordial, and that doesn't mean one that doesn't do the due diligence that they were elected to do, but one that is comports themselves in a professional way. And it's one that I've seen, that's a behavior pattern that I've seen among leadership bodies, whether councils and mayors, commissions, in other communities where I work across the Eastern Shore. And it's one that enables a local government to do the work of the people in a much more effective way and in a way that presents themselves as leaders in their community, not only leaders for a body of government, but leaders in their community. And that's a responsibility that I think our city council and our mayor should have.
Now, in looking at incumbents' campaign literature and so on, I mean, she cites that she saved some $300,000 in refinancing the city debt, got raises for city employees from money that was left over in 2012, extended and expanded the life of the enterprise zone, for example. Also got some state and local programs for tax breaks for businesses, add employees, and so on. Just a few things that I'm certain that she would point to. The only bus route that was put together just recently. I mean, she's got what she feels is a lot of accomplishments. So one of the questions I have, and I had this also for on the mayoral side, is why is it that one shouldn't return the incumbent? Because usually these kinds of elections are also referendums, not just simply about challengers, but they're also about a referendum on the incumbent. Why shouldn't people vote for Debbie Campbell?
I think what you have to ask yourself is Salisbury of 2013, looking back 8 years, the Salisbury of 2005, has our city made the type of progress that we would expect in that time. Hopefully, we can look back on 8 years of anyone's service, and hopefully we can look back on the 8 years that our councils, that everyone has spent on the council over that time period doing something. Hopefully, they've had some effect, whether it's the only road, the Bateman-only road intersection, whether it's saving a few hundred thousand dollars over the course of 8 years. Those are all laudable things. And hopefully, this council, just as the council of 8 years ago, just as councils of 16 years ago, have something to point to. And so I don't begrudge my opponent for pointing to things that she's accomplished during that time, but it's still not enough. And we've spent a lot of time fighting over things like our fire chief. We still don't have a permanent fire chief. We've spent a lot of time usurping the mayor's authority as the executive, as the city's chief executive, to oversee the city attorney's office. We've spent a lot of time on the revitalization of the River's Edge property. We've spent a lot of time on things that have not made progress and have not been the most important issues that Salisbury should be dealing with, that could have been spent on economic development, that could have been spent on reversing the brain drain, that could have been spent on building our relationship with Salisbury University, that could have been spent on the many important things that Salisbury and our leadership should be working on. So, okay.
Are you saying those particular issues are not that important?
No, what I'm saying is that we have not spent enough time on the things that will make progress for Salisbury, such as economic development, such as reversing the brain drain, and spent more time fighting over what I think are things that could have been resolved in a much quicker fashion.
Because there's, as you probably know, and I think the Daily Times described it as the council of no, culture of no. That's certainly something that that the Mayor Jim Ireton, the incumbent on that side, has talked about. But Campbell says, look, you got to say no until you can say yes. That is, you may get some proposals, but they got problems, and you got to go through them, make sure that they are well constructed, and in doing so, you're also making sure that the taxpayers' money is being spent wisely. I mean, that's the argument to be made. Don't you have to be have some due diligence here to really?
Isn't that critical? You bet. But diligence is only as valuable as what it results in. And if our due diligence doesn't result in any product, if you have no vision, if you're not carrying us towards something as the leadership body of this city, then I ask, what is the value of returning the current council majority and returning the incumbent to that office? What I've stood for throughout this race is that I have a vision of where Salisbury should be. I've laid out a plan of what I intend to work on to get us there. And I will work on each of those items nonstop until we have implemented and begun to achieve that particular vision. And that's a vision of Salisbury as the cultural, transportation, economic, civic capital of the Eastern Shore.
So let's turn to downtown and revitalization. Okay. I mean, I've been watching that ever since I got here, which is about 10 years ago. And we did a couple pieces on it, looking at various kinds of proposals. And despite all of the efforts, whether it's a Greater Salisbury organization, it's some downtown efforts, they all seem to bog down, and it seems to be some real difficulty revitalizing downtown. So one of the questions I have for you is what is your vision for what downtown might look like? But how do you get from here to there? How do you get businesses to come in? You can't order them to come in. You don't have a lot of money to spend to rebuild everything. How do you do that? Because that's a classic problem for not just this city, but any city.
Right, Don. Well, I don't think my vision is too different from many other people's vision for downtown. I see a mixed-use, vibrant place. I see a mix of retail and housing. One of the things that Mr. Albero talked about last night in the Camden Neighborhood Association forum is that he will not allow 500 affordable housing units downtown. Well, I have yet to read in anyone's plan where they call for 500 affordable housing units downtown. I certainly don't. I think we should have more market rate housing downtown. I think we should have a mix of housing, retail, commercial, office, I believe, and civic institutions in our downtown. I believe we need a performing arts venue downtown. My vision is not too different from anyone else's. I don't think it's that different from Mr. Heath's, who is in this race. And I suspect if we were to ask Ms. Campbell what her vision for downtown is, it wouldn't be that far off. So the question is, how are we going to get there? The best examples of downtown revitalization in the last 20, 25 years are actually in relatively small cities. They're Asheville, North Carolina. They're Greenville, South Carolina. And what those places did, two things really, really well. One, they created civic space. In the case of Asheville, they created a cultural and performing arts venue. And in the case of Greenville, they created outdoor space. They created a beautiful park downtown. Now, that's all well and good. But the other thing that both cities did and did very, very well is they created and the local government supported. They created a downtown business association, a group of business owners, and they made that group made an investment, an initial investment, and that investment grew. In the case of Asheville, it was a small hotel, an old abandoned hotel that they turned into, and it was this beautiful old building. They turned into mixed-use building, you know, some apartments and retail on the ground floor. And it became a beacon that that sort of investment was viable. And you see examples of that potentially starting in our downtown right now.
Such as?
Such as the Feldman property redevelopment. That's going to be a mixed-use property, housing, offices, and retail on the ground floor, potentially a restaurant right on the riverfront. That's a good thing. And it's a mixed-use development, and it's an investment that shows this type of partnership for our downtown, because it's multiple investors, multiple business entities. I don't know everyone involved. Some names are familiar, of course. That type of mixed-use investment on our riverfront, capitalizing on that asset, is going to be a beacon that other people should be and can be investing in downtown. I was just in another place that's a great example. And I think they're doing another thing right that other businesses can learn from in investing in downtown. I was in Main Roots Coffee Shop just a few minutes ago. And there you've got several young people who have started a business, started a small business in downtown. But what they're doing is they're committing to a set of values. They're committing to their values. They're communicating those values. Down-to-earth coffee downtown. And they're living those values, and they're not compromising them in any way. And I think if more businesses, local businesses, are going to invest in downtown, they're going to need to find that same message. They're going to need to brand themselves in a way that is authentic, that is of the place, of the people, and is committed to downtown. You can't be a Chick-fil-A and say, I believe in downtown Salisbury, or a McDonald's and say, I believe in downtown Salisbury. Those things will come later. But that's not who's going to change and revitalize downtown today.
So what are you going to do about the parking lots? I mean, particularly as I walked around, and I've been here a while, there's these big, gigantic parking lots. As a matter of fact, I understand at one point, those parking lots were actually filled with buildings, and downtown was actually filled out. Now we have these large parking lots. Things tend to be sort of far away from each other, which is one of the interesting things. Matter of fact, one of the things we did was to take a look. Somebody gave me a map of the center of Salisbury, right? And they overlaid it on downtown.
Okay.
And what you found was that even if you didn't count the parking, if you just got to the entrance of the mall itself, you found you were much further away from, say, the other end of the mall than you would be, say, for instance, in downtown. So this is not an issue of distance,
right?
So how do you deal with these big, vast spaces that we have in terms of parking, and how do you make this downtown attractive that you want to go there?
Wow.
Because the mall, because I tell you, the one thing about inside malls is they do that very well. They construct their malls and their environment so that you want to stay there for a while. You don't get that sense about downtown.
You're absolutely right. So, and you just identified what is the real challenge, and that's perception. And that's okay. There's also a perception that downtowns are unsafe. And the reason that people perceive that downtowns are unsafe is because there aren't a bunch of other people there. If you don't have eyes on the street, if you don't have activity almost 24 hours a day, and that doesn't mean downtown needs to be a noisy entertainment district. And in fact, report just came out from Strong Towns the other day, which is a great organization that does studies on small cities and small towns, that said entertainment districts are keys to failing cities. If you want to fail in a revitalization effort, go with a single-use district. Just make it about bars and partying. So if that's the plan for downtown, it's not going to succeed. It has to be mixed use. So, all right, let's get to the perception on parking. It's going to be critical that people feel like they've got a short walk, a safe walk, and that they're walking past a lot of things. In order to get people to walk past a lot of things, you have to have more things downtown. If you're walking past empty parking lots, you're not going to feel welcome. That's not a humane environment. So, and then there are more things we can do, street trees to improve walkability. On-street parking actually improves walkability because people feel a buffer between them and the cars that are speeding past. These are all proven things. But what we need to do on these surface parking lots, because they are a complete waste. They are the, as I've come to say, they are the lowest and worst use of valuable real estate in downtown, to put it in real estate terms,
right?
Of valuable real estate downtown. They're also environmentally damaging. They're terrible. Many of these parking lots are paved right up to the river's edge. So you have impervious surface where everything that comes out of your exhaust is just running right into the river. But if we build a river walk, if we finish the river walk just as we've planned, if we build buffers, yesterday the Planning Commission saw the updated critical area ordinance, which increases the buffer between buildings and the riverfront. If we implement all of these things and build on our parking lots in a way that incorporates parking, that incorporates ground floor retail, and that incorporates housing above, keeping heads in beds, as the mayor says, mm-hmm. as others say, keeping this mixed-use development on these properties, that will be the way to get to a revitalized downtown. And ultimately, that's the way to use those properties. 80-plus percent, over 80% of the vacant land in downtown is owned by the city of Salisbury. It's in surface parking lots.
Well, would you get rid of some of these? Would you sell some of this parking lots off?
Absolutely. Surplus these parking lots. Just like we surplus an old police car that has run its course in the Salisbury Police Department, just as we surplus radios when there's better technology and we need to replace them, surplus these parking lots, put them on the market, and put them on the market for their surplus value.
And then what do you envision then going in there at that point? I mean, new buildings, what would it be?
Eventually. Mm-hmm. Eventually. You know, I think there's also opportunities for open space in some of these areas. You know, I'd like to see I think as you have more people downtown, there's going to be a demand for access to open space. So once you're starting to build on these properties, you know, you could have some pocket parks, things like that. But yeah, in most cases, I think maximizing the floor area coverage of these lots is going to be the way to have economic success and sustainable success in downtown.
I want to turn to the rental industry. As most people know, I think about 60-70% of the housing stock is rental. A few years back, we had an effort to kind of rein in some of that, particularly for the single-family homes which were being rented out. It was known as 4-2, mm-hmm. got eased a bit to 4-3. What is your solution to trying to bring that down, or do you think that should be brought down, but particularly in the single-family home areas such as Camden, for example? What would you do about that? I mean, do you support 4-2, 4-3? What's your sense about that?
Well, I'm certainly not I'm not in favor of overturning 4-2, 4-3. I think it's a policy that has its benefits. It's a policy that was certainly not looked fondly upon by the rental industry or the university. But here's why I think we need to move forward from that conversation, and why I think we already have started to. 20, 30 years ago, as the university grew, it didn't build adequate housing for its students. Call it the state. Let's not blame mm-hmm. the university, but sure. The state didn't build adequate housing for its students. So that pushed that growing student population into the neighborhoods. As we grew as a city, as we sprawled outward, the people, the families living in those neighborhoods, like my neighborhood, Camden, where I live, sought housing on the periphery, sought housing on the edge, in the new suburbs, in the new developments on the west side and on the southeast side. Nothing wrong with that. You know, I understand why people wanted that and they sought that. So that's the trend. But now we've seen the university working in public and the state in public-private partnerships to build new types of housing. You look at the Orchard development going up. You look at University Park, University Village. And an even better example, Seagull Square, a mixed-use development, a very dense mixed-use building that incorporates ground floor retail close to the street, close to Route 13, with housing above. What a great way to house Salisbury University students and also provide a resource in retail, not only for students but for the neighborhoods, for the communities. As a Camden resident, I can walk over to Starbucks. I often go, you know, to local coffee shop mm-hmm. instead, but I can walk to Starbucks, or I can walk to Tutti Frutti, or I can walk to, you know, the shop like Velvet Pearl. I don't know what I'd buy at Velvet Pearl, but I can if I want to. I should probably be buying my fiance a gift there. I can do those things because, you know, they've provided retail, ground floor retail, in a relatively dense setting, in a relatively urban designed fashion, right on the strip, the Route 13 strip, and set a new bar, I think. And that's also the type of development that we could see downtown. Mixed use, ground floor retail, housing above, relatively dense. And I think that's a good thing. As far as our neighborhoods, the last numbers I saw were in 2011 American Community Survey. It's 64% rental in the city, so between 60 and 70, as you said. That's a very high number. That's a very high number. I was working with Mayor Willie in the town of Easton just 2 days ago, and we were talking about the rental figures in a particular neighborhood at 58%, and he was lamenting how high that was. And I said, you know, Mr. Mayor, just come down to my town and come down to Salisbury, and, you know, we'll show you high rental rates or high rental statistics. That said, what the rental industry and the mayor and to some extent the council have done in the last few years is worked hard, and some of it was through the iron fist of Mayor Ireton, but worked hard to implement a set of stricter policies for neighborhood preservation. And as a result, what you've seen is a rental industry that has begun to police its own, begun to tighten up its own ship. And the mayor actually spoke to that yesterday.
Yeah. Let me ask you, by the way, speaking of the mayor, he's had a series of proposals, including through strikes in terms of if you're somebody who owns an apartment and you get called in, as well as amortization in terms of whether this thing was originally designed for this. Do you support the mayor's legislation?
Well, there are a number of different policies there. Amortization, I think, is something that, you know, if this council, if Ms. Campbell had worked with Barry Tillman 8 years ago when amortization was first proposed with Mayor Tillman, if they had implemented it then, we'd be 10 years down the road, 8 years down the road, and we'd be getting closer and closer to a place where that could be implemented. I think it's a conversation. That's a policy that is kind of an old talking point and an old plan for an old dynamic that has shifted. So I think there are probably better policies that could be implemented today. I think we need to work with I need to work with the mayor if I am elected, and work with the rental industry to figure out exactly what those policies are. But I do think that's a particular one that is a little bit outdated. As far as three strikes, what we need to do is we need to find out who are the bad actors, as far as renters, homeowners, landlords, all three groups. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a renter, a homeowner, or a landlord. We need to find out who the bad actors are, and we need to implement policies that will hold everyone to account in terms of calls for service, in terms of behavior. And at the end of the day, we also need to make sure that we're not punishing victims through those policies. Right now, the way the last three strikes ordinance was written, it didn't exempt the victims of domestic violence from being affected by that three strikes ordinance. So they could have been kicked out of their home, kicked out of their apartment if they were subject to that three strikes ordinance. So there are better ways to do this than what's been written so far. So I would work with the mayor to implement the best policies, a well designed and refined policy for neighborhood preservation.
By the way, I just want to let our listeners know that Council Member Campbell has had to had a personal issue she's had to take care of, and if she comes back before 9:30, we'll take the entire hour, or we will go ahead and set aside a half hour just for her, as well as we're talking to Jake Day. We hope everything turns out well for her there. Well, let me ask you. There's also this issue about businesses, and this is proposal, and it's by the mayor, talking about the idea that if you get service calls, a couple of service calls, if there's some serious crime issue, say twice in 2 years as a business, you could be closed down. Serious could be a year. Do you support that, or do you support some modification of that?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I don't know the impetus for it. Yeah. I haven't spoken to the mayor about it. I've spoken to some of the members of the council about it. And there's a lot of your listeners can't see me, but there's a lot of finger pointing.
Yeah.
Of whose idea this was. I've heard from business owners that it came from the council majority. I've heard from the council majority that it came from the mayor. I've heard from some people that it was first drafted by the city attorney. I don't know what to believe, and I certainly don't want to accuse anyone of drafting a policy that that a lot of people don't agree with. So what I will say is I don't think it makes sense for our businesses. Certainly we need to have policies in place that ensure that the people who either abuse our police services, our police and fire services, through calls for service that are either false or unnecessary, or those who frequently create or originate calls for service by bad actions and illegal actions, certainly there should be a way for us to recoup those resources, the cost of a call for service. Shutting down businesses, certainly there are. I'm willing to bet that there are businesses in Salisbury, bars, whatever, that are problematic, that do not police their own, that do not abide by the law, and you bet we need to be tough on them. And I'll bet we can all picture which businesses we're talking about. And some of them change names frequently. But there are also businesses that when they have a call for service, it's because they're looking to deal with a problem that should be dealt with by the police. They call the police for assistance, and they should not be punished for that. A great example that was brought to my attention would be if a business found a person, a bar, let's say, found a person who was under the age of 21 and using a fake ID, and rather than simply turn the person away, they decided to call the police. If that happened twice in 2 years under this ordinance, I think the question is, would they then be subject to losing their business license? Would they subject to then be shut down? That doesn't make sense. So that's something that I would have to work with the mayor and fellow council members, if elected, to improve.
I want to talk a little bit about politics in the last couple of minutes. First of all, I noted, for instance, that Brad Gillis, who's a real estate broker, he has come out and support Jim Perdue, of course, from Perdue Farms, has come out and support Michael Weisner, real estate and rental property manager. On the other side of the aisle, as it were, I'm sure he would agree with this, but I know that when I talked to the mayor, Jim Ireton, he strongly supported you. And originally, as everybody probably knows, the mayor and Debbie Campbell were strong allies coming into this council.
What are you suggesting now?
And as I look at this council, we've had this working majority, which a lot of them came out of Camden, at least have similar ideas about where the city should go or not go. And as you know, that we had prior to that, there was another council majority called the Dream Team, which seemed to be much more moderate when it came to business. I'm trying to figure out where you are, your candidacy in this mix, especially when I have, on the one hand, somebody like, say, real estate folks coming out support, and yet I have Jim Ireton, obviously, who would, be at odds, say, with the rental industry. What? Where do you fit in all this? Who encouraged you to run?
Well, okay, so I was encouraged to run by members of the Wicomico County Republican Party, members of the Wicomico County Democratic Party, clubs in both cases, leadership from both clubs. I was encouraged to run by Mayor Ireton. I was encouraged to run by former Mayor Tillman. And it seemed to me that none of these people can see eye to eye on about anything. Yet they all wanted me to get involved. And I took that as a sign that perhaps we could do it differently this time. So I'm not beholden to any particular group. And in fact, as I hope I just evidenced, my support comes from a very, very diverse base. I think for too long in this city, we have had these sides. And these sides, you know, they bifurcate. They split and they, you know, morph into these other sides. And you thought they were friends and now they're enemies and you can't figure it all out. And, you know, we need a chart or a Venn diagram up here to in the studio to be able to work it all out. I want to do it differently. I don't want any part of the old fights. I'd like to be I'd like to make change in the city in the way we do business and in the way we conduct ourselves and as those who hold public office. So yes, I've got support from the business community. Yes, I've got support from real estate community. Yes, I've got support from Camden. As you may know, I grew up on Forest Lane with Mayor Tillman next door and Council President Hall across the street. You know, so I grew up in the midst of one of
all
those
of the
challenges.
People there.
Hey, right, I grew up in the midst of politics in Camden, and I just like to do it differently, Don.
We've been speaking with Jake Day. He's running for the 2nd Council District in Salisbury. Also, we invited Council Vice President Debbie Campbell. She has been taken away at a personal issue. We will invite her back for a full half hour. You've been listening to Del Marva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
Del Marva Today is a production of Del Marva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Cora Mitchell is our volunteer producer. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, delmarvapublicradio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.